Hello and welcome to another episode of Stories from the Pack. Ryan Hooper here. Thank you all to everybody who continues to support the podcast. We're on to the second series of Stories from the Pack now. And if you haven't listened to us already, really a brief overview is what will become apparent when we do the episode today, is we like to get a guest on to share their own stories, their own stories from the pack and what it means to them. And I'm delighted for this episode to be joined by someone who will be a very familiar voice to Wolves fans, very familiar voice to fans across the Midlands, because it's BBC WM's Daz Hale. Daz, how are you doing?
How are you doing? Well, first of all, great. Yeah, thanks ever so much for inviting me along. It's a real privilege to be here this evening as well. So it means a lot. So thank you. And we were saying before we came on air that we actually look like twins. There's definitely a resemblance.
Yeah, so when it goes out on video format, potentially, yeah, it might kind of throw you. But I don't know about you, Daz, but I think if you have a certain look that we have, you get compared to a lot of people. I think if you're bald and you've got glasses, you've got a list of people that Harry Hill, yeah. Heston, you know, some better than others. But
Walter Zenger.
Walter Zenger is a Wolves theme, yeah.
We'll have the last laugh when me and you form the Right Said Fred tribute band. Never mind that the Wolfpack Howlers, we'll go around and we'll clean up.
Yeah, we had Sol Bakken, but I don't think we could get away with Sol Bakken, but he had a similar sort of cloth than we have. But no, thank you. I think for a lot of people, you know, as we'll come to really, for yourself and your WM connection as well, you know, you're someone who's well respected, and it's great to get your story today. So what we'll do is we'll have a look at we'll refer to the current if we can, and then we'll sort of skip back. So currently, a little bit about BBC WM. So at the moment, Monday to Thursdays, you're on the breakfast show. Is that right? How's all that going at the moment?
Well, that's right. Yeah, I mean, it's been really strange because I took over the breakfast show nearly 2 years ago with Samantha Meir, who it had gone a full circle because when I was in my band about 300 years ago, the first national radio we ever did was she had a programme on Radio 5 Live. Mm-hmm. And then she asked me to fill it. I was asked to fill in for her when she went on it. She actually got married, and I think it was her way of not inviting me to the wedding by getting me to present. So it went full circle. But since lockdown, 6 months ago now, BBC Local Radio has changed its schedule. It's like an emergency schedule at the moment. So you've still got lots of people, like everywhere else, who aren't actually coming into work. They're working like at home and mm-hmm. online and stuff. So, yeah, so instead of doing Monday to Friday, 6 till 9 together, we now, I do Monday to Thursday, 6 till 10, and she does Friday, Saturday and Sunday, 6 till 10, so we can't work together. But it's the weirdest thing ever, actually, because obviously over the years, doing the job, you report on what's going on and you tell a story. But the weirdest thing now is that every single one of us are part of this story, because mm-hmm. this whole weird thing that's happened this year is impacting on every single one of us. So you actually from the epicentre of it, and it's a bit bizarre at times. You know, and I think everybody at times just stops and thinks for a second and see like everybody walking around in face coverings. And it's like something from a science fiction movie, isn't it? But then you get on with it. But we've certainly had, I think we've played it, we're there obviously to inform people, but I think also it's been important as well to try and entertain them a little bit as well, because otherwise you'd go absolutely bonkers, wouldn't you?
I think that's the thing, isn't it, really? It's the kind of, you've got to be informative, but keep it light as well. And as you say, and you know, I love radio. I'm a bit of a radio geek, and I really believe in the part that it plays. And I think more than ever, you know, the radio is there, because I'm in a position now where 90% of the time I work from home, so I'll have a radio next to me to kind of keep me going and keep me informed. And at time of recording, the Midlands is going through a lockdown, and there's a lockdown planned for Tuesday. And I think, you know, having that sort of relationship with the radio and that news is vital. And as you say, it's universal, because it brings people together. But it's the whole question of news and overload and how much is too much, and like you say, so I guess you have to balance that getting it out there with keeping it light and...
Yeah, it is. It's a difficult balancing act because obviously, and I think a lot of people these days, the way people listen to radio has changed as well. I think the days of like, you know, somebody like turning the whole family crowding around the radio and listening to a whole show, it ain't like that anymore. So on average, most people, especially in the breakfast time, will probably listen for 20, 25 minutes. So it almost becomes like a rolling things like, you know, when you watch BBC Breakfast or This Morning Britain or whatever it's called, and you have to keep repeating information. Now, it must get on people's wick if they're listening all morning. We said that half an hour ago, but people are turning on all the time. And it's about hearing people's stories. And that's the one thing that local radio can do. And I think it's really come into its own over the last 6 months or so again. Usually when the snow's really bad or something bad happens and then you turn to your local. Yeah, all that sort of thing. Yeah. And I mean, like you, I mean, what I used to do when I was a kid, when the Wolves was playing away, I'd be listening in, you know, on a Saturday afternoon to Radio Birmingham and then Radio WM, listening for the goal horn and your heart skips a beat. And so I'm from round here, and this is the only station I've ever really, I've done bits and bobs for others and I've had like a few little whispers along the way, but this is where I want to do it because this is where, this is where we talk from round here. This is where I'm from. Mm. And so this is where I'm really feel most comfortable. And so they'll have to, you know, I'll probably get sacked eventually, but in the meantime, it's a privilege to be on air and to be doing it.
Brilliant. And I think you just touched on that there in terms of the sport, and me and Daz were having a brief chat sort of before record. And I think this will resonate with a lot of people, but you mentioned the goal horn and stuff. And on the first series of stories from the pack, I was chatting to Lindsay Hooper, who's a broadcaster, and she was talking about her introduction to football, that it was around the radio. And I think that's for a lot of people now. And I know social media has changed things, and we can do a deep dive on this, and we probably haven't got the time, but to kind of, in a roundabout way, I think with BBC WM, that goal horn, that anticipation, being in that front room with my dad, and we're going to cut to, and that moment, as you say, where you're catching your breath, and you're like, oh, I don't want to know if it's the money, or I don't, you know, it's iconic, and, you know, the phone in, and you know, I think Radio WM is a great sort of subculture where it's you know, it's relevant as it's always been, and it's something which, for me and for many football and Wolves fans, is part of our football foundations.
Well, likewise, and the question I used to get, I still get, who does Francis support?
Yes, yeah.
you can make your, and we get accused by everybody of being biased as well and having an agenda.
Yeah.
No, we're not. And with the phone in, you phone in, we how do we know what people are going to say? Even if you phoned in and said, my name's Fred Bloggs, and I'm going to say, I want to talk about Villa. And then you could come on and say anything. So there's never any agenda. It's just whoever calls in. And like you with the goal horn, is if you're winning, you don't want the goal horn to go. And if you're losing, you're urging it to go on. Yeah. And when, obviously, I've been really, really privileged to do like a lot of so many games over the years. And when we first started doing the games, you'd be at a match and the goal horn would go. And during the goal horn, you'd get the producer in your ear telling you which way it had gone. You'd say, Wolves have scored or Villa have scored. And I said, I don't want to know. It's ruining it for me. So sometimes, otherwise, you could sometimes tell in the reporter's voice, it used to kill it if it said the goal horn had gone. They'd say, there's a goal at St Andrews, but it's bad news for Blues, isn't it? And it's killed it, ain't it? So I said, don't tell me, just say, there's a goal. Goal at Wolves, goal at Walsall, goal at wherever. And let me just... you know, experience it the same as the listener, really.
Brilliant.
So, they didn't take any notice of me, but now they did, so that's what I wanted to do as well.
No, fantastic. And as I say, I think, you know, we talk about ways into the game and, you know, and even more so now at time recording when we can't go to the games, it takes on a different level as well. But for yourself, Daz, if we sort of start at the beginning, for Wolves and your relationship with Wolves, when did that start in terms of when did you become a fan and when did you get involved? And can you talk us a little bit about your first memories?
Yeah, well, I've got a brother who's 18 months older than me, and my dad used to take us both down to begin with, and I'd have been about six or seven, and it'd be easy for me now to come on here and say, I could have gone and Googled a matching one. That was the first one. I've asked him, he doesn't remember what it was. But the one I really remember first, I think it was in 75, 76. So I was born in 68, and they beat Newcastle 5-0 at Molineux. And I think Kenny Ibbett scored 3 or 4, and his brother was playing for Newcastle. And that's the one I really remember. But so my dad, he's still with us now. He watches Hensford more often than not now, because it's 82 and whatever. But so we used to go, and we used to go in the North Bank, right on the far left-hand side of the North Bank, where the old Molineux Street stand was, and obviously the John Ireland stand miles away. There was something actually called like a children's pen. Mm-hmm. And so we'd stand in there, and you would get people with crates, standing on crates and stuff. And that's where we always used to go, and my best friend Staggy used to come with us, and we've still got season tickets next to each other now, because when I'm not, brilliant, I have got a season ticket, and then don't tell anyone at the club, because I'll give it away to one of my mates if I'm working, but then I've still got it up the South Bank now. And I always remember we used to park by the Elephant and Castle down by Smesto, and we'd get to the top of the hill, and you could see the TV gantry, and that's when you knew then if it was going to be on Match of the Day or Star Soccer. By how many, and if you knew it was the BBC, if there was loads of cameras, because obviously very few games were televised then. Mm-hmm. And if there was 2 or 3 cameras, oh, we're going to be on Star Soccer today. And I can honestly say that genuinely, I call it the dingle tingle now. But even all through the terrible days when the ground was falling apart, match days, the butterflies, and then when you walk down, the anticipation, and that even if it was whoever on a Tuesday night in the rain or whatever, I still feel it every time. And I'm still buzzing when we've won. And so I have to be up at 2:45 in the morning. So after a night match, if we've won,
can't switch off.
Checking Twitter and doing this. and I'm still got a real like cloud. Well, even after last night, you know, Bobby, after the loss to Stoke in the League Cup, I really never want that to change, because I think the point where you're just like on an even keel, what is the point then? So the massive highs of the win and the massive lows of the defeat, and I've never ever got used to that ever.
It's mad, isn't it? And you're right. I mean, we've first game. I've had people on and they said, look, I haven't got a clue. I don't know when my first game was, but I know my first experiences. And I think that's the key. And I know we romanticise, but people listening to this will be doing the same as well. So we're all good. We're in good company. But it is the walk to the ground. It is the idea. Yeah. I mean, for me, one of my first memories was my dad was taking me into a pub for the first time. And he was saying things which I hadn't heard him say at home to his mates. And he was all like, I want part of this now. And that to me was as exciting as enthralling as what was going on the pitch, because I think in your sort of your formative years, you're aware of it, but you're more taken aback, aren't you, by the experience of it,
as opposed to the smell of the tobacco, and I know that I think cliches are cliches, by the way, because they're true most of the time. My football club didn't choose a football club, it chose me because it was through the family. But if other people have chosen it a different way, that's fine. You know, I'm not one of these people, I'm a better fan than you, or you're a better fan than me. People do it, and the times have changed. And like, I think it's getting to the point now where, because I've got a friend of mine who's in quite a well known band, I won't name drop, but he's a Chelsea fan. And he gets to the point now where a few years ago, when he told him he was a Chelsea fan, he had to start then saying, yeah, but I've been watching them since, just so they don't think you're a glory hunter. And I think there's a little bit of that going on now, where you have to, yeah, but I have been, what was it? I went to Chorley. Well, actually, it was 3 games against Chorley, and I did. All 3. The can at Wolves. But if you weren't there, who cares? You know, my dad was there in the 50s. I wish I'd been alive then, when we did have a decent team, you know. So it's not about proving that you're better than this. I'm about, ultimately, if you support the team, you support the team. And not everyone can even go, can they? Mm. You know, because of either the money or work or all sorts of reasons. But that doesn't stop. If I'm not at a game, I'm still living every single moment of it. So I think we should just get over ourselves a little bit and just embrace the fact that, okay, we have got more fans now. But if the club's going to progress, then that's going to be the case. And it's got to be the case. Otherwise, the club can't progress, can it?
I think you're right, and I do. And I think to kind of take the music angle that you referenced there, I kind of compare it to if you follow a band and it's the kind of your band, and then they get big, and then it's kind of like, yes. Oh, I've been following them from day one. I had the first album sort of thing.
Yeah.
And like you say, people with a badge of Chorley, and it's like, well, there weren't 50,000 there, but yeah,
how many people have been?
But I think you're right. And I've done one recently with an American guy, and he's gone into Wolves recently. And I think it is for everyone. It is a part of success, and ultimately you're going to get people that come on board. But mostly they respect the fact that they probably had a different route, but they embrace, you know, the Wolves.
Unless you go on Twitter. But that, yeah. But social media is nasty, whatever it is, isn't it? And again, though, ultimately, by the way, I love it when people have got different opinions, because when you're doing a football phone-in, there's nothing more bloody boring than everyone going, yeah, I agree with you. Who wants to hear that? And yeah. It's like with Twitter. But again, everybody is entitled to an opinion. Now, you might think it's ridiculous. A lot of the time I do, but they probably think, well, I think it's ridiculous. But that the worst thing to do would be to support a team. And we know what the types of teams are where there ain't that sort of passion. Where it's just like, you know what I was saying before, where you just, I'd never want to get to that point where you're just on this even keel all the while. You'd want to be involved with a club like that, and some people are. Yeah. So at least with this extreme highs and extreme lows, agony, ecstasy, sometimes within a day, you know,
yeah.
How dare you lose a football match, especially one in the Premier League. Everyone needs to be sacked. And well, that's the world we're in now, and probably would few people before would have just done that in the pub, you know, over a pint at straight after the match, or written to a load of bull about it, whereas now it's a lot more instant. But everyone's entitled to it, and we all read it, don't we? So,
it's right. It's that instant sort of, I think, you know, earlier on in the season, or sort of between season, there was a frustration, we haven't signed players. And it would probably been only a week, but it felt months, because it's that whole refreshing social media for every minute and for every hour, and going off sound bites. And
but it's a lot cheaper than bloody club call.
Oh, and the club call, yeah.
Like, be flashing on the CFAX, Wolves to sign £2 million striker. And there'd always be a really tiny question mark, which you didn't really look at the time. She'd be phoning up, and it'd be like, Jeff Owen, who I know, Jeff, and he'd keep crapping on for about 3 minutes about nothing. It was cost me about 10 quid to find out there were been rumours that there might be interest. So at least it's a bit easier than that now, isn't it? You know.
I think, yeah, I mean, to perhaps people of a different era, club call, that was basically, I don't know if it was a premium number or it wasn't cheap.
Was.
it was literally, you call the number, and you would get the news. It seems such an alien thing now, but yeah. And then you've just reminded me of sort of CFAX, and I can even remember Wolves Midlands was 390.
Yeah.
Waiting then, for that page to turn.
That's it. And you got, and now I've got repetitive strain on my thumb through Twitter, but before it was through CFAX, and like when it was a midweek, if you wait, trying to find everybody else's scores, it'd go through page at a time, it'd be page 9. You have to keep going through. And of course then as well, after the match, the pink, the Sports Argus, Sporting Star, you'd get that from an away game, and you'd have to get that just to find out how everybody had got on, because probably Radio 5 Live, if you'd missed the results at 5 o'clock because you were still getting into on your coach or in the car, they'd then just be crapping on as they'd still do, you know, Liverpool and Man U. You wouldn't know how Walsall had got on, or Shrewsbury, or to see the league table. So it's all far more instant now. We are sounding old, aren't we? Sorry.
No, but it's nostalgic, and I think people listening will be like, oh, yeah. And I think that's the thing. I mean, the pink, it's like, yeah. I remember sort of my dad queuing up outside the newsagents after the game. And if I read it first, I was in trouble.
Yeah.
He needed to see that league table on the back page of wherever it was.
Again, you know, you'd buy, I know the sales used to be much higher if like Wolves had won, for instance, or Villa had won with the Argus. And you'd want to read it, and then I'd love to get the Express, have scrapbooks and cut out all the stuff about the Express and Star and the pictures and things like that. And I mean, again, what about instant stuff now? I remember when Wolves were like minutes from going through out of existence. And I remember again with when was Steve Ball going to go to Coventry? Mm. The only way you could find out, we actually had to wait for an announcement on the radio. And it was like, whereas now, again, you'd be, there'd be so many different sources. And so I was like a nervous wreck, I think, all day. I remember putting a flag out my bedroom window when Derek Dugan, and as it turned out, the Batties saved Wolves. I don't think the neighbours were very impressed, but sudden.
Brilliant. And you mentioned there, and there'll be many of them, you mentioned sort of highs and lows, and that Wolves are a unique club in terms of, you know, the back-to-back relegations and being the first team to win all four divisions and so forth. So there's lots of highs and lows, but we'll kind of end this section on the positive. So by doing that, we'll start with a negative. So what's the lowest point following the Wolves, would you say? Or is there a moment where you thought, not why am I doing this, but God, it's not going to get any better than this? Or
Well, you see, because when we talk about them going all the way through all the leagues, that was when I started going away. Away from home, like properly. I mean, I've done like you did the other way, local game and whatever, but I was 15, 16. And so we used to go on the Cannock Wolves, and we went down obviously from the first division to the second division to the third division to the fourth division, and obviously Chorley and all that. And people see that as a bleak time. It was a bleak time. I must have done 80 grand, and it was like, it was an adventure. And you're 16, 17, 18, you're going out with your mate. We knew we were crap. I remember one game at Notts County, we hadn't scored a goal for about 10 matches, and the ball went in off big Ray Hankins arse, and we were 3-0 down, and the Wolves fans were still celebrating when Notts County made it 4-1 just because we'd scored a goal. You know, it was genuinely that bad. So although in the club's history, that was a bleak time, for me, it was horrible, but it was still a great time. So I was going away from home and going to all these grounds, and it was a real part of me growing up. I think for me, the worst time was going down under Saunders, because the last time when it had happened, we had no money and we were crap. And it was honest crap, because he had a lot of teenagers playing and people who'd come from non-league, and they were giving their best, but they just weren't good enough. But when you look at that squad, and we all know what happened that season, and that team should have been, and I think we were actually in the top six, weren't we, or seven early on under it was Solbakken, wasn't it? I think it was absolutely criminal what happened. And those players, and we all know, we're Jamie O'Hara now. If anyone was at Brighton, I was actually working that day, and I was fuming. And I think I said a lot of things on air that I probably could get sued for an accident. But I was absolutely fuming. And that was the low point, because it was totally avoidable. Yeah. And you see, I'm not blaming one person. It was a whole catalogue of bad decisions. Going back from the year before, when Mick McCarthy gave Roger Johnson the captaincy, which absolutely destroyed and split the dressing room. And we never recovered from that. But of course, then that happens. But then, obviously, everything follows on then, bringing in Jacket and the leper colony and the start then. I don't think we should forget what a big part Kenny Jacket played, actually. And again, we'd reached the glass ceiling. He'd done what he'd got to do. He weren't going to get any better, but it was vital what he did. If you go and look at how long Sunderland have been in that league now, which you've got a big history and a big ground and a big fan base, don't mean you're going to do that. So, but the low point for me, really, was going down again, and that, I thought it was humiliating. And I haven't forgotten a lot of the stick I had from a lot of people either. So don't begrudge us now, things get a lot better.
Oh, I know. And I think to that point, I think you make a really good point whereby you've seen them a lower level, but you knew that was within their limitations. You know, you knew what those players were capable of. But the most frustrating point, and you know, you can criticise Wolves fans, or you can, but I think, if you know that they're not good enough, you kind of go, okay, look, they're not good enough. But it's like you say, it's that infuriating, when they've come off the Premiership and good wages and so forth, and you've gone, God, why have you got yourself in that position? And as you say, number of on and off the pitch decisions, I guess, ultimately were there. But that's the frustration, isn't it, really? If you've got a
low... They're stealing the living, some of them players.
Yeah.
And you know, they've reinvented history, some of them, but I ain't forgotten. And anyone who was there then ain't forgotten. So for me,
yeah,
that was when I've been the most angry, because it was totally, totally avoidable, and it should never have got to that. But in the end, it may have been a blessing in disguise. And again, that season, the following season, was great. It wouldn't have been much fun a second time round and a third time round. The novelty had soon worn off, but that year, and Lee Griffiths' dance at Port Vale, these are some great, great moments, weren't there? But that was when I was the most angriest, and that was the lowest point for me personally, I think, yeah.
And I think, just before we go to your highlight, just to touch on that, because I think it's important, because I remember speaking to Paul Berry on this about Jacket, and I think you're absolutely right. I remember the Preston game, and it was kind of like, look, what's gone has gone. It's a clean slate. And coming out of the warm-up, you know, there's 4,000 or 5,000, however there were, and it was like, let's give it a go. But it took a certain type of character to lead that team, didn't it, I think?
Very much so. In fact, I remember the Preston game. I wasn't working that day, so we actually went in the away end, and I saw a bloke in the pub beforehand. The previous time I'd seen him was on top of the Empire State Building. I'd gone there with my wife to New York. And he used to go there, he's from Telford or Shrewsbury, and we used to see him in the away games in the 80s, and got to the top of the Empire State Building, there's a bloke in a bloody Wolfstar. I says, I know you. But the next time I saw him was Preston away, wasn't it, with Kevin Davis refereeing the match for most of it. I've seen him recall. And punching, I think Danny Bart had two black eyes, I think, after that game. But no, so that was the start, wasn't it, of the resurgence.
Brilliant. And then sort of, you know, lots of good moments, but yeah. What would you, if you had to class a moment or a season as being the best feeling you've had, what would you say?
Well, I've got to say, the last 3 years, it's the best team I've ever seen. And I love the fact that we've got the Porto strip now, by the way. That's the way I get two fingers. That's great. I think, When Bully came, and obviously we missed out on the playoffs the first year they'd ever done the playoffs, and but those next two seasons, actually, when he got the 100-odd goals, and say I was going home and away, and it was just incredible, because it gave us our pride back, because we were the laughing stock of football, and you know, scoring his winning goal at the Hawthorns when we got back in the last minute as well, when we got back up. But I think actually, for me, still one of my, and we've had a lot of highs, and you know, it's difficult to pick one. Yeah. I am going to go for the Millennium Stadium that day, after so many heartbreaks and so much frustration, and to be there that day around people. I'd done some work before the game and after the game, but I was actually there. I'd got in the away end with me, all my friends, and it was afterwards. Obviously, the Sir Jack moment when he put his thumbs up.
Yeah.
And we'd made this record called Hey Jonesy with Steve Ball's brother. And that got played over the tunnel in the next hour as well, which is a pretty special one. But then it was just going out afterwards, coming outside, seeing all the fans, and then seeing people who you had seen at bloody Aldershot on a Tuesday night in the rain in front of, you know, and to see those people. And it was just a special moment. And again, the massive frustration then was, for whatever reason, when Sir Jack pulled the plug, didn't he? You know, financially, when I'll never understand why that happened. Mm. But that still stands out for me. And also, I mean, you wanted one, didn't you?
No, carry on.
As well. Yeah. I mean, we went to Wembley twice that year. And one was the Mercantile Centenary Credit, which we went down to. But to be there again when, not that long ago, a blink of an eye, Wolves were like, you know, on their arses, and there they were at Wembley. They'd already won the fourth division. There was 80,000 at Wembley. It was incredible. And again, we had hired our own minibus from Burntwood, and my dad come, and my friends like that. And you look back now and you think, what a decade that was. I mean, we were 1980, won the League Cup and finished sixth. We're in Europe the next year, and then we're in the fourth division, and then it's like, what an incredible few years that was. Somebody should make a film about that.
I think that's the thing, and I know we're biased, but it's true, you know. It's, you know, there's obviously been lots of books written about it and so forth, but yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, really, where I don't know about you, I love right now, and similar to you, I've got friends who are Baggies fans and Villa fans and so forth. So I remember sort of the League One stuff and that. But I enjoy what I'm doing now, but to kind of quote Nuno, I try and stay humble as best I can, because it is just, I don't know if I just feel like it's going to wake up and it's, and things are going to change.
All go wrong again.
Yeah, which is terrible.
Oh, I've got my, we can't see this if we're not showing the video, but I've also got my T-shirt from when we flew to Newcastle and Bully got the fourth. So I don't know if you can see that from there now.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I was bloody on game that day. It was New Year's Day. You can't see it, can you, very well? But yeah,
no,
so I've got
no.
there as well.
We can get, so, well, that's worth a mention, Daz, then, because as I say, for people not listening, and you'll put them in the picture as well, but as I understand it, there was a Monarch sort of charter flight to Newcastle.
Right, yeah.
And talk me through that experience then.
It was right, yeah. So, because it was New Year's Day, and it was like, oh, yeah. I mean, we'd have gone on the coaches anyhow, but they had this idea. And in the end, I think there was 1,000 on these chartered flights. So I ended up sitting next to, actually, on the transfer from the plane to the ground, to the David Instone, who was got to know very well over the years since. And so the idea was then, just obviously it was Newcastle away, and we ended up winning 4-1. John Burridge was in goal for Newcastle. Mark McGee played for Newcastle before he managed, and Steve Ball scored all 4 goals, all up our end in the second half, and obviously did his aeroplane when he got the 3rd goal as well. And again, that was just another magical moment. Of course, all those seasons began to blur into one afterwards. It really was Groundhog Day, because every season we'd spend £1 million on this player, £1 million on that player, and have all this excitement. This was going to be the year when, but it didn't, obviously it wasn't for a long, long time. And that was a really frustrating period as well.
And you mentioned Bully, you know, iconic. Any other players over the years that stand out for you? The sort of favourite players?
Yeah, I mean, like my first first hero was John Richards, because that's when I first started to go. And I mentioned Kenny Hibbett earlier as well. And Kenny Hibbett is the only footballer I know who would kick off at 3 o'clock, and by 3:10, he'd have a massive sweat patch all the way down the front of me. And again, you know, they say never meet your heroes. We've got to know them both over the years, and they're absolutely wonderful men. So I've got the posters on my wall, although I have to say, the arrival of Debbie Harry in my life from Blundy seemed to limit my Wolves posters for a while. But then, yeah, and then obviously, you know, obviously I remember Robbie Keane's debut at Norwich when he was 16, wasn't he? I don't think he'd finished his paper round. But obviously, it's like all of us. We all have our own favourite players over the years, don't we? And I think the interesting thing now is how much we've connected with this bunch of players. And I think that, again, is the characters of them. A lot of them live round by Wolverhampton. They've ingratiated themselves in the community. And I was talking about this earlier today, actually, that the connection between the supporters and Nuno. Now, I know if we lose the next 10 matches, that will probably go pretty quickly, because that's football. But I think apart from Graham Turner, who actually got booed onto the field in his first game as Wolves manager, by the way. This is the, you know, the, and I mean, Mick McCarthy was great as well for what he did. Jackett was great. So, but yeah, I mean, John Richards, Kenny a bit Bully for me, really.
Brilliant. And no, I think we've got to touch on the current. You know, we're, at time of recording, we won our first league game and unfortunately gone out of the cup. But you know, as you say, you referenced earlier, one of the best sides we've seen, and I think that's really interesting with the players, because we talk about that a lot, because you contrast it with the era of when we went down and the players. And I'm not saying there's an exact correlation with this, but some of the players who we're aware of, and some of them have been named, would live in Solihull and different areas. And I'm not saying that affects you on the pitch, but it's part of it, isn't it? Because I think what you get with these players, and what's really, I don't know about you, Daz, what's taken me with these players is they're 21, 22, but they're so mature, and they've got such a great attitude. And I know some fans are saying, oh, you know, maybe look at some British players. And then I think, well, no, because these Portuguese kids, they've got it all. They've got the talent, but they've got the
humility,
and they've got the respect. And
well, before I went full-time at WM, because I was still doing quite a few bits and bobs on the radio, I ended up for about 3 or 4 seasons doing some like match day stuff for Wolves, and so I go in with suits. But at that time, we'd moved to the new North Bank, not the new North Bank. And so I'd be there in like behind the goal in my shirt and tie, having a good shout and a swear, then going doing the interviews at half time. And I'd be there like at 1 o'clock interviewing people and stuff. But after the game, the players then they stopped wanting to come out of the, you know, like the main entrance at Molineux, because they didn't want to have to sign autographs. And so they used to walk along the side of the pitch and have like this, the car park then, which was up now by the Wanderer pub where that was. They used to park, they used to have like their own private car park, but instead of walking out, most, not all of them, there were some who would walk out and sign autographs, but these bloody big time Charlies who ended up taking us down to the third division, League One, didn't even want to sign autographs for, you know, the kids who, you know, probably about 10 kids, 15 kids. And, you know, you lose a lot of respect for people like that, don't you? But this, but I know that from people within the club that they don't tolerate big time Charlies. They won't have it. And if you do get a bit above yourself, you ain't going to be there for very long.
I think so that's it.
They're nice people and they like each other and they get on. And like in any job, whether it's football or radio or whatever you do, if you all get, you know, if you don't get on with people, you could have the greatest job in the world, but it ain't much fun if the environment's a negative one. So if you can all get on, and ultimately then I think you've got each other's backs, haven't you? You put your body on your line for each other because you actually like them rather than thinking, oh, screw him. Do you know what I mean? So no. I think it makes a big, big difference.
No, brilliant. And just sort of before we close, really, I know we could talk all night, but in terms of the pack and the title of this series, what does that mean to you, being part of the pack?
It's my life. And this is why it's been so tough, because I haven't done any. At the moment, the way we're doing things at the moment is differently, because we're only allowed one reporter in the ground and everything. I actually don't want to go like this at the moment. I wouldn't want to go in there when it's empty and having to have my temperature taken. And it really does. It was bittersweet with the Europa thing at the end, because how terrible would it have been? It'd have been great, and it'd have been terrible if we'd gone all the way to the European final and couldn't have bloody gone.
Yeah, you know.
And so it's my life, and it's the one constant in my life. It's all, ever since I can remember stuff, it's been there, and it's my spirit. It's my spiritual home, which sounds really, really cheesy and really corny, but it is. And unfortunately, my wife. I mean, her family and my wife are all season ticket holders at the Albion, right? So, and she still keeps throwing 5-1 at me every time we but although she's dreading it now this season, but she gets it, and it's the same for her as well. So it's the thing about same religion, different denomination, really. And that's the one thing I've noticed, you know, covering these games all over the years, you know, for WM, and I've never, ever gone to any game, if you know, so you go to Bristol Rovers Walsall on a Tuesday night, it's always never felt anything more than an absolute privilege to be able to go and say, I'm doing football, I'm talking about football on the radio and any phoning or anything like that. You're living your dream, really, aren't you? It's your hobby, and it's like me and you now just chatting about football, and that's what it is. And ultimately, we've all got our passion and for our teams, and I wouldn't have it any other way. But you know, take away the colours of the team, most of us are actually pretty much the same breed, and it's like anyone for me who, you know, like I was saying before, not everybody can go to the game, and that's fair enough. But if your next door neighbour might support Albion, Villa, Blue, but if he or she's the same as you, and they have the ups and downs, you've got the common ground, haven't you, really? And then you have to pretend to be nice to them now when they've lost, and really, you have to have them a bit of like sympathy from time to time. But
it's the ultimate icebreaker, isn't it? You know, you mentioned you know, going up in New York and seeing a Wolves fan and so forth, and you know, on your travels, if you've got your Wolves colours on or just a football fan, and it probably does sound a bit twee and a bit cheesy, but it's so, so true, and it's what makes it unique and makes it special. And you know, when the club kind of over the last few years, as you know, brought into this sort of pack. And I just think it's so accurate, because this pack means you're a collective and you're part of it. And what background or, you know, what cultural references that you have and how you've come to being part of the pack, you're all one in the same in that regard, as you say.
And you know what? Because again, it's like it's family. In fact, you can say what you want within a family, and anything goes. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you're all there for each other. But if anybody else says anything about your family, and that's what it's like. And I have to say that you know, if you speak to other people and other supporters, because again, we've all been to crap. You know, you're obviously going to get games with this really flat atmosphere, and it depends again on how. But a lot of them all say now, you know, the atmosphere, when it's rocking, there's no better place than it's spine tingling, isn't it? And again, people who support other teams will say the same. But, you know, it's from here, isn't it? And if you're on holiday and you see someone in a Wolves top, oh, look, he's got a Wolves top on, as you say. You go and have a quick chat with them and stuff. And then you have to do the thing about how long you've supported them for, which I was on about before.
Yes. Get your points in, sort of, yeah.
Yeah. And then, oh, you're in off Radio WM, and then it's back to, again, who does Francie support, which has gone full circle from the start of the conversation.
Do you get that, Daz, in terms of, because obviously, you know, your voice is so known over the Midlands. Have you had any funny encounters where you've been on the phone to someone or you're speaking to someone and you're kind of like, who's going to sort of break cover? Do they know who I am, sort of thing?
It does happen. It's happened. In fact, the most bizarre one was it actually happened this week when I had my bloody face mask on. No, it does from time to time, yeah. But that's the good thing about radio is it's not like, I mean, I've got friends who work on telly and whatnot, and I actually did a show for a couple of years, and she's a really good friend of mine with Alison Hammond, and she's gorgeous, she's lovely, but if you ever go out with her socially, you can't, you know, and you cannot choose if you're going to be celebrity, you can't choose when you're famous. It's only not just when you're in a good mood, it's when you're late for your boss, or you've sat around with your partner, or it's, you know, and she's magnificent with it, but it really does. It's just like you're just bombarded. No one gives a toss about me. But she's brilliant with it, but it's much easier on the radio because, and again, as we said before, me and you have got such nondescript faces anyway. So Brad Pitt, I get sometimes, obviously.
Yeah, of course.
But, yeah.
I mean, I it was quite funny actually. I mean, I won't get recognised, but I got recognised. It was in a way, and then it was kind of a little bit of a cutback. There was I was in the park just going for a walk, and then this lady was running up to me. She stopped her run, took her headphones up. She kind of come up to me, and then I went, "All right," and she went, "Oh, I thought you were someone else." And it was quite funny because she kind of made such an effort to do that. Because if you're not sure, usually you would kind of be a bit coy and a bit all right. But she stopped her running everything. And then I then went over to the park to meet my daughter. And there was a guy who looked just like me. And I thought, okay. I wonder if she's found him yet. But anyway.
No one's ever unpleasant to me if you're out and about. And the odd one. Every now and then the odd person will, you know, stop you. But they just...
Yeah.
It's lovely. It's absolutely lovely, and it's great that it genuinely is a privilege to be able to be on the radio, talking to the people of the area that I've never lived anywhere else but from around here, you know. So it's part of it really, and like so it's never a problem if I just want to say hello or shout at me at the football or whatever.
Right, you've heard that now.
Well, it's nice, you know, and no one's ever been unpleasant to me, I don't think. They have online, but again, that's fair game, isn't it, really? Well, and I'm also a great believer of that if you dish it out, you've got to take it as well, really, and that's fine if you're putting yourself forward for stuff, which we have to, in both of what we do, then not everybody's going to agree with you, and that's fine, isn't it? Really, you know, as long as they're not, abusive. Well, they are abusive sometimes, but not too abusive, and that's fine. I can live with that, really.
We get the odd bit on this podcast, and it's funny because we kind of give up our time. We don't get anything for it other than the fact we love it, but. Again, you put yourself up there, you put yourself a vehicle, and it was quite funny because this is a couple of years ago, said on Twitter, oh, it's five virgins sitting in mom and dad's living room recording a podcast. And I was like, you know what we should do? We should get t-shirts printed with that. So you have to turn it on your head, you know, and it's kind of yeah. like, well, if you put
and it's wrong because it was the kitchen, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know,
I mean, yeah. It was their mom's nose, huh? Yeah.
But as long as it means that, at least I know who you are, and that's the job. And again, like, yeah. doing what I do, not everyone's going to like you. I mean, no. And it's not very nice when they don't. But as long as I know who you are and they're listening, then, you know, you have to just, that's again, part of the job, isn't it? It goes with the territory, so.
No, and on that, for anyone who continues to listen to the podcast, just a very quick mention, obviously, the regular podcast continue throughout the season. We've got the Alternative Hall of Fame, where we look back at players sort of past and present. We've got the Stories from the Pack series, which what we're on now. And we've also got the film cast as well. So there's loads to listen for everybody who's interested, all on the podcast channels. If you like what we do, then please leave us a 5-star review as well and get in touch. But in closing, Daz, real pleasure speaking to you. And if anybody wants to continue to keep in touch with Daz, your Twitter handle is that best, Daz Hale WM?
That's it, yeah, simple as that. Yeah.
So keep
just, again, thank you. It's just great just to be able to come on here and just have a chat about football and chat about Wolves. And it's unusual for me because usually I have to do like asking all the questions. So it's nice not to have that pressure. You've had it all instead.
Well, no, you've made my job very easy. If I call it a job, but it's not. It's just talking to a friend here and a fan, and you know, and it's great. And we love what we do, and hopefully people enjoy listening to it, and what we've talked about will bring back some memories, and people have enjoyed listening. So from both of us, thank you, and we'll see you soon.